think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 262 of Low Limit Football on this 11th of November, 2019. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we look back and remember all the veterans and everyone in armed services and thank them for their service for keeping this world safe for everyone. We can't express our gratitude enough to them. Back to football. Jurgen Klinsmann is back in business, but not as a head coach, but as a member of the supervisory board at Hertha Berlin. The U.S. men's national team gets set to face Canada in a must-win CONCACAF Nations League match, and they'll have to do it without both Michael Bradley or Christian Pulisic. Juve managed to survive another Inter victory with a sloppy one of their own against AC Milan on the weekend, with Cristiano Ronaldo being subbed off again. This weekend saw other big matches in England, Germany, and MLS. We're going to discuss that and much more with our special guests, Jack Grimsey, and from the New York Red Bull, Alejandro Romero Gamara, also known as Kaku, who will be joining us in just a couple minutes. But let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. What did you think of the action this weekend?
Oh, I thought it was amazing, but let me ask you something that's not... Well, I guess we do have to keep up with football, so that's how it's called here in the States, but what is up with Dak Prescott's dance that you saw in the pregame?
You know, they talked about it on the pregame. I guess it's his way of going through the motions, and it's like muscle memory, right? So he's practicing those motions in terms of cocking his arm back and then throwing, and it helps him, that little dance that he was doing. I guess he was doing it like to a samba or something like that, his music. whatever it is, it's that rhythm, it's that muscle memory that allows him to try and become more accurate. And one of the big knocks against him when he first came out was that he wasn't accurate. He didn't get rid of the ball in time, right? So he's trying to be quicker with his release. I mean, every great quarterback in football has had a lightning quick release. And it's the difference between being a good quarterback and a great quarterback. And that's what Dak is doing. He's trying to improve that. And listen, right now as it stands, he's one of the top five quarterbacks in the league. I know everyone hates the Cowboys. Everyone loves to hate the Cowboys, whatever. Fact of the matter is, he's actually, by passer rating, he's one of the top five quarterbacks in the league right now. So
so you're saying if you were like a physical trainer or like working for the staff, you know, he would need to continue to do these kind of pregame workouts.
Absolutely, because it allows his muscles to remember how to twitch and how to get back there quickly to release the ball. So it's just like it's like taking free kicks as practice, right? You want to hit that kick right, you want to hit it square, but it's about the motion, it's about flexing and extending the knee, it's the timing of swinging through your hip, it's the timing of keeping your head down, and you do these little exercises to manage those motions so that when you put them all together it becomes messy, like, I guess, right? If everyone wants to be one of the best free kick takers in the world, that's the guy you aim for. So that's what it is. It's about muscle memory. It's about training your body to go through and perform the exact same action. The best example, Rob, golf is the best example, because if you can
if you can manage your swing and perfect your swing, but then repeat that perfection over and over and over again, you become one of the best golfers in the world. Plain and simple.
Yeah, practice makes perfect, essentially.
Exactly, exactly. So let's get down to it, man, because we have a great show tonight. You know, the fact that we got both Jack and Kaku to come on the show tonight is awesome. So I'm really excited for it. But you, my friend, you have the honor of trivia this evening. So if you would do the honors, Your Honor, I would appreciate it.
I will indeed. And I think one of the things that we also have to take from this weekend is another memorable Messi performance. You know, a hat trick between against Celta Vigo and two free kicks that were amazing, Joe. I mean, I'm sure you saw the game, but man, that was incredible to see.
Unreal.
A performance like that.
It was funny. I was kind of watching on my phone. And when I saw the first Messi free kick, I literally just grabbed my wife from where she was. I'm like, you have to watch this, because it's when he gets it right, man, nobody gets it righter. You know what I mean? It's just it's ridiculous. But he does it over and over and over again. You know,
it's like a penalty for him in a way.
Exactly. It's crazy. It's probably easier than a penalty. I would love to know what his success rate is, you know, versus the other. But it's just crazy how he does that. Just dips that ball up and over the wall and into the corner, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. It's just something.
Absolutely.
So
having said that, that was Messi. The two goals that Messi scored over the weekend from free kicks puts him at 33 for most free kick goals in the last 10 seasons in Europe's top five leagues. It's 33 free kick goals.
Okay.
And in the top, and that means he has more free kick goals than these three teams in the last 10 seasons. Can you name them?
Oh, wow.
All big teams.
Three teams in La Liga?
No, three teams all across the top five leagues.
Oh. Nothing that's been relegated, though?
No.
Okay. So three teams.
I'm talking big teams, like a top 10 team. That's your hint right there.
Okay.
So basically, Messi has had 33 free kick goals, the most free kick goals, and he's had more free kick goals than these three teams.
Okay. I'm just writing down a couple names right now. I think I've got two, because I don't remember these teams scoring free kick goals frequently, and I don't really have a free kick specialist, so or at least that I can think of. So that's where I'm going with that. That's going to be a great question. I can't wait to get to the answer to that one. So let's hit opening thoughts tonight. And opening thoughts for us tonight is reflection on the big match in England on the weekend between City and Liverpool. City managed a victory, I believe. I'm just getting my notes up here. My computer's frozen a little bit, but my notes tell me that City did win. I'm sorry. Liverpool won 3-1. I don't have the goal scorers handy at the moment. I believe Sadio Mane. I did see one from him. I'm just actually going to I'm trying to get the stuff up here real quick. But I think one thing we want to talk about, one of the things we want to discuss, is the controversy, right? Two handballs by Trent Alexander-Arnold in the box, or at least two perceived handballs. The goals, by the way, Fabinho, Mo Salah. Fabinho was a rocket. And then Sadio Mane for the third goal. And then Bernardo Silva scores in the 78th minute, a consolation goal. You know, let's talk about the handballs real quick, right? Trent Alexander-Arnold, one in the first half, one in the second half. Let's talk about the first half one, because that was the one that I didn't see. But then when you brought it to my attention, I thought you were 100% right. I don't agree with many people saying it was a handball. And for the reason, Rob, that you pointed out to me, on one of the replays, it was kind of clumsy the way Bernardo Silva dribbles in. And the ball, as he falls, goes off of Bernardo Silva's hand and then on to Trent Alexander-Arnold's hand. So I believe VAR reviewed these, no calls. But for me, that one wasn't a handball. The second one for me, I mean, if it was a handball, it was a handball on Bernardo Silva, right, given the letter of the law?
Yes.
The second one, again, I hate the rule. I hate the change. But given the letter of the law, is a handball and should have been a handball. It should have been a penalty kick. You know, it's unfortunate. His arm was down. Was it completely by his side? No. But his arm was down. Ball comes up, hits him square in the hand. Obvious, right in front of the referee, I believe it was Michael Oliver, if I remember correctly. And missed again. And you know my opinion of Michael Oliver, so we're not going to go down that road. But in the end, you know, City had the bulk of the possession. City seemed like the more dangerous side, but Liverpool did what Liverpool wanted to do. You know, possession was 55-45 for City. They had more shots at goal, but not on goal. Liverpool took care of that. I just felt like City played the better game, but Liverpool found the way to win. What was your take on the penalties? You know, the match. What was your take on it all, Rob?
Yeah, I think regardless of what you might think about the controversy with VAR and the handballs, I think Liverpool played exactly the game they wanted. You know, pressing up the field, you know, pressuring Manchester City up front in the counters, playing well and being able to switch the ball from fullbacks to the front. I think it was exactly the game that they played. I think it was, I mean, the first one with Fabinho's, his shot, no goalkeeper in the world was going to stop that. Not even if it's Kyle Walker playing for a few minutes in goal. But no, I think it was well deserved.
Yeah.
I think the second goal was a beauty. I mean, you know, starts with Trent Alexander-Arnold just pushing it from the right side on the right flank, squaring it all the way to Andrew Robertson, who's essentially playing as kind of a winger, but he is playing as he's a left back, and then feeding the ball into Mohamed Salah for the header, and then Sadio Mane squaring in and putting his shot past Bravo. Yeah, I think it was exactly the game that they wanted to play. I think it was exactly how they wanted to move forward. And generally speaking, in regards to the handball, I think, yeah, the first replay, when you look at how, you know, the clumsy challenge that Bernardo Silva has of him hitting the ball first before Trent Alexander-Arnold. You know, by the way, Joe, you know, none of those calls were checked by VAR, actually.
I thought they were. So,
no.
All right. I'm surprised that they weren't when you say that, because isn't VAR supposed to go in and check that anyway?
No, he just played on.
Wow.
Play on. So that's the issue when it comes to the way it's being utilized, but it's different interpretations based on what referee is being used.
Right.
So it's kind of that, but I think in the end, I think we do have the deserved winner. I think we definitely have now a race that I feel as if, though, if City are really, really going to challenge them, they need to get past Chelsea and Leicester first, because I don't know about you, but, you know, a 9-point gap heading into November, obviously we still have a long way to go, but it's not looking good for the other teams, and I think it's looking very, very good for Liverpool at this moment.
Yeah, you know, and this is something you and I kind of talked about a little bit after the match. Obviously, Leicester and Chelsea are 8 points back of Liverpool. City's now 9 points back of Liverpool. And you start to look at a situation. I mean, it's still early. The only 12 matches played. We're not, you know, we're a third of the way through the season. But you start to look at how these teams, Leicester, Chelsea, City, are going to start to cannibalize each other, meaning that they'll have matches against each other. Worst case scenario is that they're draws, right? Because then both teams drop 2 points, and then Liverpool continue to advance. But this is the potential of where we are placed now because of an 8-point lead for Liverpool, and they also, you know, in league they look fantastic. No one's been their equal. So you start to look at this and say, okay, if these teams are going to cannibalize each other and cannibalize the points off of each other, Liverpool don't need much more, because Liverpool need to drop points. I mean, they seriously need to drop. They need to pick up draws, 4 draws. Think about that, Rob. Right now, just for Leicester to run the table, right, Liverpool would need to have 4 draws. And then that would make them tied for the lead. So these are the math components that happen here at this time. Now, again, it's early, not to say that it can't happen, but the mathematics, I'd love to see like an analysis. Sometimes you'll get these on ESPN. What's the percentage of Liverpool winning the EPL right now given the situation? I would love to see something like that, and I don't even know where to find that, but that would be something of interest to me, because I think that will show you mathematically how big the Liverpool victory against City was on the weekend, Rob.
Yeah, absolutely.
So moving forward, I believe coming off of obviously we're on the international break now. Liverpool have Crystal Palace coming in, and City, I'm just looking through the schedule quickly, have Chelsea at home. So we talk about cannibalizing points off of each other. Here we go, right? This is the start of it. So worst case scenario is City draw at home to Chelsea. That's a disaster for both teams. They've really got to, you know, both teams got to go in with a killer instinct to win that match. And that's going to be one of the highlights when we come back from the international break, is going to be that match, because now you're going to see if the lead holds true for Liverpool. Because as those teams will start to drop those points in those matches against each other, if Liverpool continue to win, and again, Liverpool have Crystal Palace on the weekend, they're in 12th place, then you'll start to see that gap widen because the other teams are just beating up each other. So certainly interesting times in the EPL ahead. Rob, let's table the City discussion, the City-Liverpool discussion, sorry about that, at the moment. And let's welcome in Jack Grimsey from OS Studios in the International Champions Cup. He was kind enough to join us, and we got to talk about the Bundesliga, which is right now is definitely the hottest race going on. Surprised to see Mönchengladbach at the top of the table. We had Der Klassiker on the weekend. We're going to talk about that as well. So without further ado, the Jack Grimsey interview. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from OS Studios and the International Champions Cup, Jack Grimsey. Jack, welcome back to the show. How have you been, man? I didn't realize this. It's been 8 months since we've talked. How are things going?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been on the show. Thanks for having me back, Joe. As you said, I think in between that time, we met up at the Football Factory, though. So good to see you guys watch some games together in person, because we kind of usually only chat about those online or retrospectively. So I've been doing pretty well. Thanks for having me on. How have you been doing, you and Roberto?
Great. Rolling week in and week out, and having a good time doing the show, that's for sure. And definitely, you bring up a good point. We've got to get back together at Football Factory and catch a match again, because that was a great time.
We also met at Gillette Stadium for that game between Benfica and Milan.
That's right.
If you remember.
Yeah, that's right. I almost forgot about that. What a hot day that was. Now the weather's kind of changing.
It's super hot.
Frigid outside, but I still don't miss. I miss some elements of the summer, but being in the shade, probably.
I hate the winter. So, all right, man, let's get back into the football talk. Rob and I were just discussing the Manchester City-Liverpool match on the weekend. Obviously a massive 3-1 result for Liverpool at home in this one, getting some distance. What are your thoughts on the match before we jump into all the Bundesliga chat?
Yeah, I think it kind of leaves City in a weird place, and obviously there were some controversial decisions, and does anyone really know what VAR does or is supposed to do? But I think that City have a lot of work to do, and I really believe that it could be Liverpool's year. It seems like kind of the stars are lining up for them, at least at this point so far. They're going to have quite a lot of games over the festive period coming into December with the Club World Cup, and that could shake some things up, but right now it's definitely their title to lose.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Rob and I were talking about the whole VAR situation, where it seems like, you know, a lot of the calls that were missed in the match in the weekend, and in general in England, we don't see those calls missed as much in some of the other leagues. And I wonder if the application of VAR in the EPL is different from the application of VAR in, let's say, the Bundesliga or in Serie A or in Spain. It feels like there's a different focus or a different tact taking to applying VAR. Let's jump into the let's jump into the Der Klassiker on the weekend. Obviously, the City-Liverpool match was not the only big match on the weekend. We've had quite a few. This was one of those special weekends. And nothing more special than watching the big German derby between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. I know a lot of the pundits felt that this was going to be a goal-filled match. And there are a lot of different things that we can talk about just in this match. But 4-0 on this one. Lewandowski with a brace. Thomas Müller with two assists in this one as well. Serge Gnabry with a great goal. What are your thoughts on Der Klassiker and what this means for Bayern Munich, especially given all the head coaching turmoil they've gone through?
Yeah, Joe, I think kind of VAR is a good place to start off, because Serge Gnabry had that goal ruled out for VAR. He ended up getting one later. But like you said, in the Premier League, it seems like the call is kind of coming from that control center, that decision, where in Bundesliga, I think the procedure is the control center will tell the referee, and then the referee is able to run over and kind of see that replay and make the decision themselves. But it is interesting. And I like that you brought up Müller as well. We can kind of shift to that more towards what actually happened on the pitch, because under Niko Kovac, it seemed like Philippe Coutinho just brought in was preferred to Muller, and that kind of had shook up the dressing room. And it seems like over the past couple years, a lot of the drama is that whoever the Bayern coach has been, is are they kind of annoying the older players? And that was a lot of the drama last year. Now that Niko Kovac is out, it's kind of continued. But his new assistant Hansi Flick, who came in over the summer, he's the interim, kind of went with a more experienced Bayern squad, left Coutinho out. And it paid off, because it just seems like if it's Bayern versus Dortmund at the Allianz, it's going to be a Bayern destruction, at least the last 3 years. I think it's been 6-0, 5-0, and now 4-0, right?
Yeah, that's about it. Well, so looking at this as well, Jack, I mean, going back into the manager perspective, you know, we've seen rumors of the likes of Jose Mourinho. We've seen the likes of Arsene Wenger, who I think knew that even talked in an interview that there were indeed talks with Bayern Munich, but that it was just only that. We even saw the likes of Ajax manager Erik ten Hag get mentioned as well. Max Allegri as well, the former Juventus manager. So, you know, looking at all these possible names, who do you see Bayern Munich perhaps going for a top name to finish off the season? Or do they go for someone that's maybe a bit like an intern, like what Jupp Heynckes has done in the past? Or do we actually do see a top manager taking forward of this team? Right now,
you know, I kind of thought they would have liked to bring in Arsene Wenger maybe, but it seems like Wenger himself maybe is not interested. Then really the best bet, I think, going forward, like looking very long term picture, would be Erik ten Hag. He had been at the club before, I believe, as an assistant, and it just seems like he's not going to leave Ajax at the moment, which good for him if he's going to stay with Ajax for the rest of the year. But coming off of such a big win in Der Klassiker, and like kind of the biggest game in Germany year over year in recent history, like I think just the momentum that they got from that win would, if I were in charge, I guess obviously I'm not, would make me kind of want to stay with Hansi Flick, because if you get your players to play big in that kind of a game, you say, well, hey, maybe what can this coach do for us, and we have this momentum going forward. It's kind of a known quantity, and with there's always like storylines coming from Bayern with the upper management. What are they kind of deciding? Was Niko Kovac kind of just kind of like a puppet of them doing what the upper management wanted to do? I think with Hansi Flick, they would be able to expect a little more control over the manager and of his decisions. So I could see them kind of sticking with him.
And rightly so. I mean, you look at the experience that he had as a player playing at Bayern. And also, I actually just looked this up real quick. You know, he was the assistant to Jogi Löw for the time that he was Germany manager, obviously won the World Cup as an assistant manager of Germany. So he obviously does bring that experience. And I think in the long term for them to save enough money to not get a top manager at the moment, you know, I think they could rely on Flick. At the moment. So obviously the big name that definitely came out during this game, and I think across the entire league and maybe across all of Europe and all around the world, was Robert Lewandowski. I mean, he's completely on fire this entire season, scoring in every game that he's played in the Bundesliga and in the Champions League as well. You know, Joe, I'll actually jump into for you for this question, because we've seen the debate so far about your Messi, who, you know, obviously scored two great free kicks over the weekend as well. But has just started to find his rhythm coming in the later half of the season. Didn't start the season with Barcelona. You know, you have the likes of players like Kylian Mbappe, Raheem Sterling, Sadio Mane, so many other great players out there that have been on great form as the top players in the entire world. But you could say right now that on form, right now, that a player like Robert Lewandowski has to be considered the best player in the world, and definitely one of the top three or top five best players in the world right now, regardless of where they are on form. I mean, what is your take so far on Robert Lewandowski's start of the season so far?
I can't disagree with you. I think he's had an incredible start to the season. You're seeing, like you said, it's the one thing I hate is that a lot of people won't look at him and say he's the best player in the world right now, because they have the world has this love with Messi or Ronaldo, and it's always got to be one of them. And if not them, it's always got to be somebody like Neymar, you know, one of those creator types. But this man, all he's done is scored in every single game he's played in the Bundesliga this year. You know, and you and I were just talking about him recently. just the run of form that he's on right now, and I'm looking because you had a great stat. I think it's like 26 goals in 12 matches, something along those lines, across all competitions. He's 22 goals in 15 matches across all competitions. In the Bundesliga, he currently leads the way with 16 goals. He also leads the way for the Golden Shoe across Europe. So, I mean, he's just having an incredible run of form this season, and I don't see how you can argue against him being the top player in the world right now because of all these things he's doing, both in the Bundesliga, in league, and in Champions League. He's doing it at the highest level of competition that's presented to him, and he's excelling. So I can't see how you can't say right now that he is the top player in the world right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jack, you know, I'll ask the same question to you as well. Do you believe that right now on form, Robert Lewandowski is the best player in the world so far this season?
Yeah, 100%. And I think it maybe is a perfect storm, like you said, with Messi's been getting back into it, but kind of had some injuries at the beginning of the season. And just it could be a perfect storm where Lewandowski does win the Ballon d'Or, because if he can keep this up, I mean, he's going to have to fight off Sadio Mane, who's been in incredible form. And if Liverpool win the title after winning the Champions League, that's going to be tough. But aside from that, like week in, week out, 2019-20 season so far, Robert Lewandowski has been the best player in Europe.
And, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, he's still on his in the prime of his career, you know, 31 years old. But there is going to be that talk that eventually he will have to leave Bayern Munich. And one of the key replacements that have been talked about him when he does eventually leave is another player that's been on great form so far in the Bundesliga, and that's Timo Werner. You know, 11 goals so far for Leipzig. He's been on wonderful form as well in the for the team in the Champions League as well. I mean, how do you assess a season so far for Timo Werner? And I can even add this into more consideration, because eventually this will kind of lead to a domino effect. You know, Robert Lewandowski leaving, that means that Timo Werner would come into Bayern Munich, which would mean that a player like Erling Haaland, that's playing well at Salzburg and has been on incredible form as well, could come in to replace him. I mean, that would not be that would be a reasonable domino effect, don't you believe, Jack?
Oh, without a doubt. And I think, yeah, Erling Haaland, I think, has 23 goals in all competitions, same as Lewandowski this season. Obviously playing in the Austrian Bundesliga, but still doing it in the Champions League, which I think has impressed everyone to an incredible degree. But Leipzig would be lucky to be able to bring him in. I know there was a tweet the other day that was like, oh, Leipzig have submitted a bid for the Salzburg striker, which is always just hilarious because the way things have gone in recent years. But I think other clubs are really interested in Erling Haaland as well.
Yeah, definitely. And Joe, I mean, Timo Werner has really been on fire. I mean, how long is it until we definitely do see him leave RB Leipzig? Because, you know, at his age, he's 23 years old. He's, you know, not even the prime of his career. It's only a matter of time before he definitely joins a big team across Europe.
He's the German national team striker as well. He scored 2 goals on the weekend with an assist against Hertha Berlin, which, by the way, we didn't get a chance to talk about, was the great display that Berlin put on with the anniversary of tearing down the Berlin Wall. I mean, he's a wonderful striker. We've been saying it now for a few years, Rob, and I think that, like you had said, his path is definitely towards Bayern Munich. I don't think he goes to like a Real Madrid. I don't think he goes to a Barcelona or someplace like in England. I think his destiny is at Bayern Munich to replace Lewandowski. The question is how long does Lewandowski stay, or how long does Bayern keep him around before they do make that switch to Timo Werner? And do they make the switch in time before Werner decides to go somewhere else? At least, you know, but I don't see him leaving Leipzig. If you think about it, he's got Champions League play there. He's competitive in the Bundesliga. They've been competing for the title every year for the past 3 years since they've come up from second Bundesliga. So I don't see him necessarily making an interim move, let's say. I feel like he will stay at Leipzig until the space is cleared at Bayern Munich, and then he will make that move there. But he's certainly, you know, not to say that he's an upgrade over Lewandowski, because I don't think anybody is right now, but he's certainly a capable replacement for someone like Robert Lewandowski.
Definitely. So, Jack, I mean, going into now this entire Bundesliga race, right now we see Borussia Mönchengladbach top with 25 points, a 4-point gap between 3 teams, Leipzig, Bayern Munich, and Freiburg as well for those Champions League spots. And then you look at Hoffenheim and Dortmund creeping up with 2 points respectively. You know, this has been an entertaining race so far. I mean, you could definitely say it's probably the most competitive race around all top 5 leagues in Europe. I mean, do we see this kind of – we kind of also did see that kind of race last season, you know, all the way to the end between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. I mean, is this now a pattern that we're probably seeing where, you know, yes, we are accustomed to Bayern Munich winning the league every year, basically. But, you know, after what we saw last season and now what we've started to see this season, you know, do we continue to see such a race like this? Or do we feel like, you know, some of the bigger teams will eventually be able to find momentum and take control of the league at the moment?
Yeah, I think we're really starting to see Leipzig emerge as a perennial favorite, as Joe was saying. And over the past couple of years, with Bayern being a little bit weaker and Dortmund not necessarily in a place to be able to bring home the title in the post-Klopp era, like when they were winning the titles in when Klopp was in charge, or even when Bayern was winning the titles when Klopp was in charge of Dortmund, it was really just Bayern and Dortmund going head-to-head and everyone else fighting for the other Champions League spots. But now, really, it's Bayern struggling a little bit at the beginning of the season. Teams even like Freiburg were in first for a little while. Now it's like Gladbach. I think they were in kind of a similar position last year. But really, it's kind of up for grabs. And I think it's good for competition. It's fun to watch because every week you don't know who's going to be on top. And like right now, Hoffenheim are the hottest team in the league with 5 wins in a row. If we went back 5 match days, they only had 5 points and now they're on 20 points. So things can shift really quickly, and it's just fun to kind of see that, a really wide open league.
You know, Jack, I want to jump in here because I want to talk Mönchengladbach for a second. 8 wins on 11 matches so far. They are the second best defensive team in the league. They've only conceded 11 goals in 11 matches. Only Wolfsburg has done better than them. Is it the defense that has really stepped up, or are you looking at a team that's also capable of scoring goals? 24 goals so far in 11 matches, which actually makes them, I believe, third best in the league. What is the difference at Mönchengladbach right now that's caused them to kind of surge to the top of the table?
Yeah, that's a good question. And like you said, you mentioned their defensive prowess and also their ability to score going forward, because Wolfsburg, they only have 11 goals scored despite conceding 10. You know, that's not going to get you too far. And I think before the season, I actually predicted Wolfsburg on the show to be in the top 4. And it's funny because, sorry to get away from your point, but Wolfsburg hadn't lost until 2 weeks ago. Now they've lost 2 in a row and they look pretty average. But getting back to Gladbach, they've shown that winning mentality in the Europa League. They just got by Roma 2-1 this week and then turned around this weekend and were able to beat Werder Bremen 3-1 to stay top of the table. So I think kind of last year they were faltering because of squad depth, but it seems like they've kind of settled in a little better this year. And I'm not sure they'll contend for the title, but they definitely should contend for a top 4.
Now, before I let you go, I do have one more question. I want to ask a managerial question, because we've seen quite a bit of movement. 11 matches into the season, we've already seen 3 coaches sacked. You know, the most recent one being Sandro Schwarz over at Mainz. Mainz sitting currently in a relegation position, but previously we've seen, as we spoke before, Niko Kovac was sacked at Bayern Munich, and Achim Berlozer was sacked at Cologne. Looking at these teams as they're constructed now, do you see who is the next coach to possibly be sacked in the league and why?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, like, usually the favorites for this would have been whoever's in charge of Schalke, but mm-hmm. David Wagner's doing a great job so far. Paderborn, I think they probably can't expect to be in any other position than they are, even though they're at the basement of the league. I don't know. Otherwise, maybe Augsburg.
I was going to say, what about a team like Bremen? You know, you look at Werder Bremen last year, if you remember, they were a team that scored in every single match, I think, for the entire season. Or if not, that streak ended at the very, very end of the season. But currently sitting just a couple points ahead of the relegation zone, that's probably not going to be good enough for them.
Yeah, and you know, it is a pretty young team that Florian Kohfeldt has. He's trying to bring in players, not just like Josh Sargent, who's just 19, but out of their strike force, it's kind of Claudio Pizarro, who's 41, and then just really a lot of young guys. And I don't know, I think they have a lot of talent in that squad, but it's been kind of an up and down year for them. But you're right, they're kind of just hovering above the drop zone.
Yeah, like you said, Josh Sargent, so far I believe he's only got 2 goals in 10 matches. in the league so far. And the top striker is actually Osako Yua with 3 goals so far in the season, 29-year-old. But when you're relying on a Claudio Pizarro, 41 years old, that's definitely not going to be the way to go. And it's you've got to get that stability. So,
can I just add as well impressive that is? 41 years old and you're still playing in the Bundesliga, one of the top 5 leagues. I mean, that can go for any player regardless of their age. But to do it at 41 and to continue to score goals, I mean, that's an amount. That's a great effort there.
Absolutely. I mean, Jack, what do you think of Pizarro? I mean, and actually, how much longer does he stick around at 41?
You know, I think this will be his last year, but I feel like people have been saying that for probably like the past 5 years. So who knows? Honestly, it's really impressive. What an amazing player.
That, he could be like, you know, that player from Japan, I forgot his name, Kazu, I think his name is. He's like 52.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he could do that. Maybe he could. I don't know what the record is for like the oldest player to play in the Bundesliga, unless he has that record. But
right. You
could definitely see Pizarro being that kind of player here in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, and you know he's just going to get subbed on and score.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's all you're looking to do with somebody that's, you know, any striker that's 41 years old. You're just looking to give him the last 10, 15 minutes, you know, somebody that's a proven finisher, just to give him the last 10, 15 minutes, see if he can bang in a goal for you. That's usually how that career, you know, sails off into the sunset, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so, Jack, before we let you go, where can folks find your work?
They can find me on Twitter at Jack Grimsey. I'm not as active as I have been. A lot of times I'm doing stuff, as you said earlier, for the International Champions Cup. So you can check out those pages. Focus a lot on Instagram these days, as well as Twitter and Facebook. So definitely check us out there. And yeah, probably in the link to the show as well.
I was going to say, whenever you have something though happen for you on Twitter, it's usually something massive. The pin tweet is great. The one where Joao Felix took your phone and recorded a message, that is phenomenal. So
yeah, that was really fun stuff doing that this summer, just getting the players to talk about the next game and where they were going to be off to.
That's fun stuff, man. It was great.
You know, it's crazy. Joao Felix turned 20 on Sunday.
Wow.
That's insane.
That is nuts.
Talk about two ends of the spectrum, right? Claudio Pizarro, 41. Joao Felix at 20. It's just something else, man. So, Jack, it's always great to catch up with you, man. And always, you know, fun time. And we definitely got to catch that beer again in New York City sometime soon. And best of luck with everything. And we'll talk again very, very soon.
Of course, Joe, Roberto, thank you so much for having me on. I enjoy it each and every time.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
And special thanks again to Jack Grimsey for joining us and breaking down the Bundesliga as they rip through a fantastic season. We're hoping that this season is just as exciting as the last one. Tonight, we were very, very lucky to have Kaku Romero from the New York Red Bull join us to talk about New York Red Bull, talk about MLS, the MLS Cup Final, joining the Paraguayan national team. We had a great conversation with him. So without further ado, the Kaku Romero interview. And joining us now on Low Limit Football from the New York Red Bull, Kaku Romero. Kaku, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you with us tonight. My first question comes from my daughter. She would like to know how your experience has been playing in New York for the Red Bulls. Bienvenido al show. Es un honor tenerte con nosotros esta noche. Mi primera pregunta viene de mi hija. Le gustaría saber cómo ha sido tu experiencia jugando en Nueva York para los Red Bulls.
Muy linda, estos 2 años estoy aquí, la verdad que fue increíble, y bueno, ahora me estás tocando jugar con el equipo nacional, así que doblemente feliz.
It's been 2 years that I'm here, and it's been an incredible feeling, and it's allowed me to also help me get onto the Paraguayan national team as well. Gago, obviamente yo hacer mi pregunta ahora, hablando de la selección, porque yo creo que eso fue algo que fue parte de tu carrera, de moverse, de jugar, de nacer en Argentina, tener padres paraguayos, a moverse, a nacionalizarte a la selección paraguaya. ¿Qué fue el motivo de hacer eso? I was just asking what it's like to, you know, go and switch from the Argentine national team to the Paraguayan national team, you know, being born in Argentina to Paraguayan parents. What was the reasoning and I guess, you know, why you decided to make that switch?
No, de chico ya lo había hablado con mis padres. Ellos siempre quisieron que juegue por Paraguay, por mis abuelos, por mis tíos. así que no fue una decisión difícil que tomé cuando me llamaron de Paraguay para nacionalizarme, no lo dudé, así que ahora estoy pasando por uno de los momentos más lindos de mi carrera junto con Paraguay.
He's saying that, you know, it was something that his family wanted, his parents, his grandparents. Obviously, it was a really tough decision to make. But when they first called me from Paraguay to be a part of their national team, I didn't doubt it one second. And I'm very happy of being on the team as well. Otra pregunta relacionada a la selección. Obviamente, está en un buen momento con Eduardo Berizzo. Anotaste dos goles y tuvo dos asistencias en los tres partidos que jugaste abajo él. ¿Cómo sentís ahí en el momento que está ahora? ¿Cómo va el equipo preparando para lo eliminatorio ahora en marzo? I just wanted to ask him about the national team, you know, the moment that he's in, playing under Eduardo Berizzo. You scored two goals and had two assists in the three games that you played in. How do you think the team is heading moving forward to the World Cup qualifiers that begin in March?
No, la verdad que estamos entendiendo la idea de Eduardo. La verdad que es un proceso que estamos conociendo y la verdad que cada día estamos mejor. Bueno, ahora no me tocó viajar por una lesión, pero el equipo lo veo muy bien, así que deseándole lo mejor y creo que vamos a estar preparados para la eliminatoria y tratar de llegar al Mundial, que es lo que todos queremos.
It's been great. We've been able to learn a lot from the manager. We're getting much better each and every day. Obviously, I wasn't able to be part of the current call-up squad because of an injury. But obviously, from afar, I am supporting them. And I hope that we're hoping that we're going to be in a good moment to head into the qualifiers and obviously achieve the dream, which is to qualify for the World Cup. Okay, entonces mi último pregunta para vos es relacionada ahora para en tu club. Obviamente estás terminaste la temporada lastimosamente temprano. Hay mucha duda sobre tu futuro. ¿Cómo tú ves ahora yendo en el próximo año, en 2020? ¿Estás pensando lo que puede pasar afuera o está más metido a lo que sucede? Just asking about obviously his season ended prematurely in the playoffs. What is the now goal heading into next year? You know, are you looking for a possible move away? Is it something that, or is it just something where you're just waiting to see what happens moving forward?
Sí, hablé con mi representante. Bueno, dentro de poco se van a juntar con el manager para decidir mi futuro. Ahora estoy pensando en disfrutar con mi familia, con mi papá, que no lo veo hace mucho tiempo. Y bueno, después en la ventana de enero, cuando se abre la transferencia, ojalá que salga todo bien y que sea lo mejor para el club y para mí.
He's saying that it's going to be him and his agent meeting with the manager of the Red Bulls. For now, I'm just trying to enjoy being with my family, being able to see my dad, and that hopefully that come heading into the January transfer window, that there is something that is able to help out myself and the whole team moving forward.
Perfect. I do have a couple more questions for you, Kaku. Thank you again for coming on. My next question is, you faced both finalists from the MLS Cup on the weekend, and you've even scored against Seattle in this season. What were your impressions of the final, and did the two teams play the way you expected them to? Te enfrentaste a ambos finalistas de la Copa MLS, incluso anotaste contra Seattle esta temporada. ¿Cuáles fueron sus impresiones sobre la final, y jugaron los dos equipos de la manera que esperaban?
Me sorprendieron porque no pensaba que iban a llegar esos dos equipos, pero bueno, felicitaciones a Seattle por ganar la Copa. Pero sinceramente pensaba que llegaba Atlanta y Los Ángeles por el año que tuvieron, que había sido increíble, pero nada, lo vi el partido muy bien para Seattle.
It surprised me because I didn't expect any of the two teams to go to the final. I had thought that because of the season that Atlanta and LAFC had, that it was amazing that they should have made that. I thought that they were going to make the final. But having seen the game, we could say that, you know, Seattle definitely played the game that they had, and it was obviously the just champion.
Right. And my last question for the night, and again, thank you for joining us. What are the main differences between the Argentinian League and the MLS for you? And do you feel that MLS is on its way to becoming a top league in the world? ¿Cuáles son las principales diferencias entre la Liga Argentina y la MLS para usted? ¿Y cree que la MLS está en camino de convertirse en una de las mejores ligas del mundo?
Sí, creo que en Argentina y en Paraguay tenés más espacio, pegan más, digo, no tenés tanto tiempo con el balón. Y creo que es una liga que creció mucho y creo que muchos jugadores de Europa quieren venir aquí porque es una liga que es muy buena, muy competitiva y creo que va a ser una de las más grandes del mundo.
You know, in Paraguay, you know, you don't have, in comparison with Argentina, Paraguay, you know, you have more space, but you don't also have the time with the ball as well. But I think it's a league that is obviously growing, and there's been a lot of players that I feel are going to join because of its competitiveness. And I do definitely believe that it's definitely going to be very much competitive on a world stage heading into the future.
Excellent. Kaku, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. Best of luck to you and the Red Bulls next season, and best of luck with the Paraguayan national team. Muchas gracias por venir al programa. Mucha suerte para ti y los Red Bulls en la próxima temporada, y mucha suerte con la selección Paraguay.
Ok, muchas gracias a ustedes. Espero que le vaya muy bien y nada, esperemos que todo salga bien con el equipo nacional, que estoy muy feliz ahí.
And special thanks again to Kaku Romero from the New York Red Bull and from the Paraguayan national team for joining us on the show. It was a great interview, and I know Rob and I, we both thoroughly enjoyed it. So, Rob, let's jump into what's going on this week. And coming off of talking to Kaku, let's talk the MLS Cup Final. I think that that's probably something on everybody's mind right now. MLS Cup Final was played yesterday afternoon. Seattle Sounders taking their second title in 4 years. With a 3-1 victory over Toronto FC, goals in this one at first was counted as an own goal, but in the 57th minute, Kelvin Leerdam scored for Seattle. 76th minute saw Victor Rodriguez, and in the 90th minute, Raul Ruiz Diaz adds the insurance. Josie Altidore does pick up a goal in the 93rd minute as a sub coming off the bench, but in the end, Seattle Sounders returned their second title, second largest crowd to ever watch an MLS Cup final live. Obviously, last year's Atlanta United crowd, over 70,000, set that very, very high bar. Rob, you know, when I watched this match yesterday, the impression that I got was that these two teams were playing the exact way they wanted to play. Seattle, you thought, you know, was so successful on the counter, especially against LAFC, wanted to do that again. We're very happy to sit back, kind of contain, and then pounce the other way whenever they could with guys like Raul Ruiz Diaz and Nico Lodero. And Jordan Morris also had a great game that ran his shoes off. And on the flip side, Toronto wanted to possess. Toronto wanted to control. They wanted to probe. They wanted to pry and see if they could break down the Seattle defense. And I think, for the most part, the teams executed what they wanted to do, but then obviously the deflection for Leerdam in the what was first an own goal kind of opens the floodgates to the match, and I think the match got a little livelier after that because, you know, Toronto had to take more chances, try and equalize, and then we saw the results. What were your thoughts, Rob, on this particular match on the weekend, and do we have a deserved champion?
We definitely do. Okay. We definitely do. I think we have to agree with what Kaku said, that we do have a deserved champion. And I think just because of the way that they've been playing themselves and the way that they demonstrated exactly how good they've been. I mean, you know, like you said, Joe, I think we have to admit that none of us expected that both these teams would make the final, given the amazing seasons that LAFC and Atlanta United had in the regular season and even the playoffs as well. But I think the way that they play, the fact that they have such an important base, important players like Jordan Morris, Raul Ruiz Diaz as well, I think we do have our just champion in the end. And in a way, it's kind of creating a dynasty because, you know, you have it's your second title in 4 years or something like
right.
that?
Correct.
If I'm not mistaken?
Correct.
Yeah, second in four years. That's important there.
Yeah, and three visits to the MLS Cup final. This is the first home final they had. Both of their first two finals were in Toronto. I thought, you know, one of the things that was amazing was when you think about it, Seattle's run, they've only scored three goals in three finals. And all three goals were scored after the 57th minute of this match. And they were champion. So up until this point, they had scored no goals and had and still brought home a title, which I think is an incredible accomplishment. You know, I remember talking about that match a few years ago, you know, where they hadn't scored any goals, but they went to penalties and managed to win the match on penalties and win the MLS Cup on penalties. You start to talk about dynasty. You know, you start to talk about those things because when this team has been this successful, you have to wonder, is this the, I mean, what would you think? You know, we always want to look at teams like the Red Bull. We want, you know, who've been quite successful. We want to talk about the LA Galaxy, and those kinds of things. But the Seattle Sounders, man, you know, they've delivered the hardware. Are they the team of the decade?
I mean, you have to be really, really confident in disagreeing. Yeah, I think they definitely have been the best team of the decade. I think, given the fact that they've been so successful in such a little time, you know, you have to point them out as one of the most successful teams in MLS ever, really. Because, you know, you win the titles and, yeah, you can have all the records. And I think with Atlanta, you know, you still have your best season record. They'll talk about LAFC. And their best season record, but not being able, and I told you this, you know, I don't think you can make a consideration about that if you don't have the titles to help you. But, you know, in the end, and I think in the unpredictability that we see in MLS, we do have our deserved champion. Yeah. And I think we have one of the best teams of the decade, if not the best team of the decade, when it comes to the Seattle Sounders.
One last point I want to make before we close out the MLS talk for the season. Brian Schmetzer. Right, he was brought in when Siggy Schmidt was let go. That was actually the title year. So he's been there. This is his fourth year. All this man has done is return two titles. He's been to three finals in his tenure as head coach of Seattle Sounders. Why don't we talk about him in the same breath that we talk about Bob Bradley, that we talk about Bruce Arena, that we talk about even some of the newer guys like Matias Almeida, Frank DeBoer, Guillermo Barros-Carloto? Why aren't we talking about Brian Schmetzer the way we talk about these other coaches when the man has just come in and won? That's it.
That's a good question. Maybe we are talking about it. Maybe it's just not a lot of them talking about it. I think when you come into essentially, and mind you, he'd always worked with Chiggy Smith for 10 years. He's been a part of the organization. For a long, long time. So yeah, I think there is that talk. I think in Seattle, he's highly renowned. I mean, he has to be. But yeah, maybe it's just maybe not the attractive taste. Maybe just the way that they play doesn't attract people. So I don't know. I mean, maybe they won't talk about it, but I'm sure we will.
Yeah, I think we should. That's for sure, because he's proving to be one of the better coaches in MLS, if not one of the best coaches in MLS. And just I feel like he just doesn't get enough credit for accomplishing what he's accomplished in his time at Seattle. And I think that if he ever decided to leave, there's got to be a decent job for him somewhere else that he could pick up pretty easily. So, again, congratulations to the Seattle Sounders, your 2019 MLS Cup champions. And by the way, Rob, last week when we talked about predicting the final, we both took Seattle. So I pat ourselves on the back on that one. So let's move on. Last topic of the night we want to talk about is the incredible scenes coming out of Naples right now, where it's massive, massive turmoil, Rob. Right now, you know, the highlights or the headlines read for most papers, Napoli threatens legal action against players and Ancelotti's under threat. That title I'm taking from NBC Sports, but it's repeated multiple sources. And on the heels of a 0-0 draw against Genoa, Aurelio De Laurentiis has wanted his team to come in retiro, which is in retreat, kind of like a training camp kind of thing. Lorenzo Insigne and other players have basically told him to pound sand, that they're not going to do it, and they decided to skip it. Ancelotti did not want it either. He decided to skip it. He also decided to skip his interviews post Champions League match, post Genoa match as well, and which has placed him squarely on the hot seat in Napoli. You know, Napoli's a team that last year challenged and pushed Juventus for the title, right? The last 2 years in a row. They're sitting in seventh right now. As they stand, they're outside of European spots. I'd have to go back and look, but I think they're in the qualification spots for Champions. They're in the advancement spots for Champions League right now. I'm just going to go and double check that because I believe that is the case. But man, with this kind of turmoil, I guess as well as Rob, a coach with the stature of Carlo Ancelotti, it's mind-boggling. And I guess at this point, who's in the right? Is De Laurentiis in the right? Are the players in the right? Is Ancelotti in the right? Who's in the right? Because at this point, it doesn't make any sense. They're second right now, 1 point behind Liverpool. But obviously, the draw on the weekend last week against Salzburg has left a sour taste in their mouth. So, what are your thoughts on the turmoil in Naples?
Yeah, it's definitely not going well. I think just because of the way that they have presented themselves heading into the season, you know, many people thought that they were going to be one of the teams to challenge for that Scudetto. Maybe not win it, but definitely challenge it with your Juventus, with your Inters, and other teams. But, you know, we're seeing now the resurgence of your Lazios, your Cagliaris, your Atalantas, your Romas doing much, much better. And I think this is just not going to end well for Ancelotti because, you know, he is a quality manager. And I think just because of the way that he presents himself, I'm sure I think something will be fine. I mean, look, they're still in the Champions League. I mean, they're assured of at least a spot in the Europa League in case something bad really happens in the last few match days. But, you know, they're assured of that. So there's nothing else we can really say. I think we still have to give it some time, and it's going to be curious to see what happens here on out between just all these issues that are happening. And I feel as if though, yeah, there has to be some sort of, and you know, like I said, we have to wait until what comes out of there in terms of who to trust in terms of him or De Laurentiis. I mean, yeah, this is really weird. This is super weird. I've never seen anything like this in a long time.
No, the only thing that's interesting to me is that a lot of times these turmoil situations happen because the coach loses the locker room, right? I don't feel like Ancelotti's lost the locker room here yet.
Yeah, I'm about to say, I mean, why would he lose the locker room? What did he do?
Right, exactly. He hasn't done anything. So, you know, I think as they move on, if Napoli come back after the break and they turn this around a little bit in Serie A, I think it'll be a big deal. I think depending on what Liverpool do against Salzburg in the next Champions League match, that is going to affect things. If you see them, you know, if Liverpool beat Salzburg and then Napoli, you would expect to beat Genk at home, then, you know, then they'll move on in the Champions League as well. Then all will be fine there as well. So there's still a lot of moving parts. And again, it's still early in the season, but there's a lot of good that can still happen. When Napoli return from the break, they have AC Milan in league in the San Siro. So Napoli, I mean, AC Milan looked great on the weekend against Juventus. They really, you know, they looked like they were an improved side. So Napoli's going to have their hands full with a rested AC Milan side. And we'll have to see if they can turn things around here again. So,
for sure,
let's table that discussion, and obviously we'll come back to it whenever developments happen. Rob, you have the honors of trivia this week, so why don't you give us the matches of the week coming up in around the world?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're obviously in the international break, and so there's nothing really entertaining in terms of league average. But we go to Thursday. We have two European qualification matches, Turkey against Iceland at 12 p.m., followed by the Czech Republic and Kosovo at 2:45. On Friday, we have the big one, a big rivalry, Brazil taking on Argentina in a friendly at 12 p.m. At the same time, you have the maybe similar attraction in Finland against Liechtenstein in the Euro qualifications. As well, at 2:45 p.m., we have Romania taking on Sweden. In the CONCACAF Nations League, we have the United States taking on Canada at 7 p.m., a must-win for this one. And then we have Panama against Mexico at 9 p.m. Surely they can't lose this game against Canada. Surely they can't. Surely Canada can't do the double.
Surely I don't say surely about the U.S. men's national team anymore. That's
fair enough, as
simple as it is. I don't say surely about the men's national team anymore. It's just it's too dangerous.
And with no Pulisic as well, it's going to get really weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, Saturday, we have Euro qualifications as well. Croatia taking on Slovakia at 2:45 p.m. At the same time, we have Austria and North Macedonia. And on Sunday, we have Serbia against Ukraine at 9 a.m. So, yeah, a few different matches from all around the world. So, also a special mention out that we do have qualification for AFCON. But, of course, check your local listings for those type of matches as well. Exactly. Now, heading into the trivia question, Joe. As I said, a memorable performance by Lionel Messi over the weekend, scoring two great free kicks and getting a hat-trick as well. And that puts him with 33 free kick goals in the last 10 seasons among teams and players in Europe's top five leagues. Can you name the three teams that have less free kick goals than Lionel Messi did this season?
So I know Juve is not going to be one of them. Between, you know, Andrea Pirlo, between Miralem Pjanic, Paulo Dybala, now Cristiano Ronaldo, I think we got 33 covered, so it's not Juve. So, or I'd be shocked if it was. I'm not giving you Juve as
a final answer. Is that your final answer?
No, I'm not giving you Juve as a final answer. So let's go somewhere else. I can't think of anybody that could take a free kick on Arsenal right now. So I'm going to give you Arsenal first.
I want you to revamp this question one more time. Most free kick goals.
Right. So who's...
So teams that have scored a lot of free kick goals.
Oh. Then I definitely want to put Juventus there. I'll take Juve for one.
Juventus with 31 goals.
Wow. Okay.
Second.
Let's go with Real Madrid.
Real Madrid in third with 30 free kick goals. One more.
Chelsea?
Nope.
City.
Man City with 29 goals. So, I've seen this from ESPN, by the way, so you could roast them or you could say whatever you want to them if I'm wrong, which obviously I won't be. Yep. Lionel Messi has 33 free kick goals. He has more free kick goals in the last 10 seasons in Europe's top five leagues. And Juventus with 31, Real Madrid with 30, and Manchester City with 29.
I'm shocked.
One single man has more free kick goals than one of the three top teams
in the world.
In the world. Yeah.
Shocked. I'm absolutely shocked. So, all right. Without anything left on the docket, let's head into the international break.
Let's do it.
All right. And for episode 262 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Jack Grimsey for joining us, as well as Kaku Romero for joining us. Next week, we're going to come back and talk about the U.S. men's national team performance in the CONCACAF Nations League. We'll talk about the Euro qualifiers and give you the next batch of teams to qualify for the tournament. And we're going to take a look at the Libertadores final coming up. So for episode 262 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Rodolfo.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.